Hi, Barbara.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking the time to chat about pollination with us today.
Sure, I'm happy to do so.
Can you start by saying your name and what you do currently and what your work was with FAO?
Yes, my name is Barbara Gemmell-Herron, and I'm currently a consultant to the World Agroforestry Center in their work in agroecology, working very closely with FAO, supporting the work that FAO has initiated and continues to do in agroecology.
So you already touched on this a little bit in your introduction. But your area of expertise is ecosystem services. Can you start us off by explaining what that term means and what role pollinators play in it?
Sure. It's a relatively new term to FAO, I would say, although it's become very central to FAO recently. It is one that I think we need to explain to people because it sounds a little bit too technical, but it just basically means the benefits that people obtain from nature, recognizing that there are these conditions and processes through which nature supports life. And we need to appreciate this more and understand it more because it's so fundamental to livelihoods and so forth. All agricultural production, forestry, and fisheries, that provisioning of goods comes from nature. That's a very fundamental service. But in addition to that, there's a lot of other processes, natural processes that support production, like climate regulation, water purification, and pollination. Pollination is a function that supports fruit and seed production, and it's provided by nature. For millennia, bees and pollinating insects have been carrying out this service, being responsible for the production of ecosystems, but it's something that people have not really focused on because it's just been happening in the background. And we don't really appreciate many of these services until we start to lose them. Now that we start to look at it carefully, we know that pollination, having insects carry the pollen from one plant to another plant or from one part of the plant to another plant, having pollinators makes it better fruit. Actually, the nutrition of it is better. And the pollinators are important for, not for staple crops, not for things like rice and wheat or potatoes, but for fruits, vegetables, seeds. Most of those plants that are the richest in micronutrients are the ones that are dependent on pollinators. In the end, it becomes very fundamental to our foodstuffs. Unfortunately, as we have gone on with agricultural development, we have farm fields that become larger, we use agricultural chemicals, we do see that pollination services are showing declining trends around the world. Traditionally, this has been supplemented by using honeybees, the domesticated honeybee, which we've convinced to live in a box that you can carry around and place in different fields. That's often been utilized to manage pollination. But for many crops, honeybees are either not the most effective pollinator, and they themselves are showing very serious threats. Certainly in the US and in Europe, when we have an agricultural system which has large, large fields with little diversity, and through the use of agricultural chemicals, we do see really declining trends in a number of the important pollinator taxa. We're really trying to figure out now how to re-engineer, how to go back and make an ecosystem that is more beneficial for pollinators.
I just wanted to follow up to one thing that you just said. You were saying the quality is better if pollinators do the pollination, the quality of the food. Can you explain that?
Plants and bees have evolved for a long time, and a plant has to decide if they're going to put their resources well into a particular fruit. If it has been well pollinated, which means it's really received quite a lot of pollen, a much larger and more uniform fruit will develop. When you see a misshapen fruit, it's usually because bees only visited one side of the flower and not the other side. And so you get a little misshapen strawberry, which for a farmer usually is not even sellable. They'll have to just throw it out, even though it's edible, but people don't appreciate it in the market. With apples also, you can see small misshapen apples have just not been visited by enough pollinators. So the plant will put more of its resources into those flowers that are well pollinated. And that also means the nutritional quality is higher in that particular fruit. They've also done these blind tastings with tomatoes and found that for people, they just taste better when they have more pollinator visits.
That's super fascinating. I had no idea that that was the case, actually. So often when we talk about pollinators, we mean bees, but there are many other types of pollinators too, right? Can you give us a quick overview of the different kinds of animals we're talking about and the special jobs that some of them perform in fertilizing certain plants?
The pollinator that most people know about is the honeybee, but there's actually about 25,000 species of bees, and many of them are solitary bees that nest in the ground or nest in trees. There's a few other interesting social bees, like there's little tiny stingless bees in the tropics that make very small little hives, and they make about a teaspoon of honey a day, but they have little colonies and they have no stinger, which makes them very attractive. So they're actually very important in the tropics. In more northern climates, we have bumblebees, which most people know quite well, very sort of fuzzy, colorful bees. They're very, very effective pollinators, and they fly very well under cold weather. So they do very well in Europe and in mountainous areas. They're very susceptible to pesticides, however, and so they're one of the groups that's under the most trouble. And they have this capacity, along with a few other bees, to buzz pollinate, which is a very important process for things like tomatoes and blueberries and many of our crops, where the bee has to grab onto the flower and vibrate its wings, and that makes the pollen sort of come out in a little puff. And then in addition to bees, there's moths, there's flies, wasps. Beetles are actually quite important pollinators. They're probably the oldest pollinator system. There's certain flowers that are completely oriented toward bringing the beetle into the flower, usually with a bit of fermented nectar that gets the beetles a bit drunk, and they stumble around into another flower. And that's actually a pollination system that's very effective and works for a few crops that are dependent on beetles for pollinators.
We've previously worked together on another story related to bees, and I happen to know that pollination is one of your favorite topics within the research that you do. Why is it such a fascinating topic to you? In other words, why should people care about pollination?
That's a good question. And so I have spent a fair amount of time studying evolution and ecology, and to me it's just so interesting that before we had animal pollinators, the whole ecosystem on Earth was not very diverse and was just wind-pollinated plants. And all these flowering plants that are so important for our agriculture and for biodiversity came about at the same time as bees. So they all sort of evolved together and made this a much more rich and diverse world. And as an ecologist, I find that really, really interesting. I used to work on tropical forest succession, and that is a really interesting process, but it takes 50 years to see what really happened, you know, what trees got established and how they grew. And pollination is something that is so fascinating, to go out in the field and stand there and watch, look at the bees that are coming. And then within a few weeks, you see the results of it. It's a very immediate and something that I think if people are interested in nature, that they can see happening in an agricultural field, and that maybe helps to bring the links between nature and agriculture closer together. So yes, it is a real passion of mine.
I want to delve a bit deeper into the threats facing pollinators. We've been hearing a lot in recent years about declining bee populations around the world. There's been talk about massive die-offs. People are worried about the effects of pesticides, monoculture farming, the effects of climate change. What are the biggest threats to bees and pollinators right now?
So if we think about it, bees and pollinators need habitat, they need a place to nest, and they need a place to eat. So they need good foraging resources, places that are rich in flowers, pollen, and nectar, and they need to not have an environment around them that's too toxic. And when we say the farming systems we had 100 years ago, actually were very favorable for pollinators. And many of the farming systems in developing countries that are small and diverse, they're actually really good environments. It's one case where we don't necessarily need to say that everything we do hurts biodiversity. We've seen in Kenya that farmers' fields actually can have more diverse pollinators in it than a forest nearby, because it's full of flowers. Usually a farmer's field has got a lot of sun and flowers. And if they're not using a lot of pesticides, the bees would prefer to go there than to go into the forest. And they may be actually very diverse in farmers' fields. But as we've gone through a normal agricultural transition to having farmer fields that become much larger, become less diverse, and then use agricultural chemicals, this really impacts pollinators. And it does pose very good questions to us of why is our agriculture going in this direction, and is there some other way that we could go about doing it to make an environment that is both less detrimental to pollinators and to natural enemies, but also maybe has other benefits as well?
And what are the potential effects of those threats to pollinators on our food security?
So pollinators, when we do not have them, will eliminate the yield of certain plants because they're completely dependent on pollinators, but that's a subset of plants. So there's many plants which need the pollinators to have a sufficient yield, but they won't completely disappear. They have a certain amount of self-pollination. So I don't think that pollinators is at the front line of food security. If you lose pollinators, you're actually going to diminish or eliminate large segments of our food supply. I don't think we benefit by putting it into this kind of alarmist category, but it's more in the sense that the pollinators are really important for those crops that provide good nutrition. And if we really continue along the same path with agricultural development becoming detrimental to pollinators, we will see big impacts on the food supply of those kinds of foods that provide good nutrition. I suppose you could just make that up with more staple crops, say. You would go to more rice, maize, maybe potatoes, but with losing out on your fruits, nuts, seeds, and many, many of the vegetable crops. So it's, I think it's more of a threat to nutrition than it is to food security. And so not to take it lightly, and I don't think it's an immediate threat. It's not something that we expect to have complete loss of pollinators and then complete loss of crops within the next few years. It's a gradual process. Fortunately, we're at a point right now where we could turn it around if we decide to. You know, we do still have this diversity of pollinators. They're there. If we build ecosystems that are more conducive to them, they will come in. They're very robust.
Now, you were part of a group of researchers that studied the effects of adequate and inadequate pollination on hundreds of farms in developing countries, in Asia, Latin America, in Africa. What did you learn?
So that was a very interesting study. We were very pleased with its outcome. Part of the Global Pollination Project had been to develop protocols that could be used to determine when a crop is suffering from a deficit of pollination. And we did this in our countries involved in that project, and then the government of Norway supported us to extend that protocol to quite a few more countries. So in the end, we could do this in 11 countries, in 350 fields, I think, almost, with a real variety of crops then, you know, from blueberries to rapeseed and canola to mango, apples. It was a very similar question applied around the world to many, many different crops, asking under what conditions does a crop suffer from a pollination deficit? And we could show very interesting result because we brought all these results together and a researcher from each of these countries, we all came together with somebody who's just a whiz at these kinds of statistics, this meta-analysis. The result that came out showed that for farms that are small farms, very diverse, that if they manage their pollination well, if they take various measures to manage pollination, with all other factors held the same, basically the ecological conditions the same, the only difference would be the level of management of pollination. If they manage their pollinators well, they can increase their crop yields by, on median, 24%, which is really a lot. I mean, we expect of a lot of the inputs that we have with agriculture to increase the crop yield by 10 or 15%. 25%, 24% is really substantial. And that was possible under diverse small field conditions. We didn't see the same response in large farms, but on the other hand, large farms could get a response, a substantial yield response, by not just managing pollination, but ensuring that they had a diversity of pollinators, which is probably because you need, if you have big fields, you need big pollinators that can fly a long ways to get inside the field. You really can't just do this with one species. You have to have a real diversity of species. But very interesting to show, this is the first time anybody has really looked at what the impact is of pollination on crop yields. So to come up with a number that shows where pollination stands up against other farm inputs was really quite significant.
What kind of measures can farmers take to get more pollinators on their farm?
So we're working on more guidance for farmers under different circumstances, but the basic rules are really not that complicated. It really comes from just thinking out what pollinators need and being able to provide them. So one of the most important aspects is habitat on farm, leaving some areas perhaps under natural habitat if that's not possible, creating hedgerows. We worked with some brilliant farmers in Ghana where fields are very small and it's just not possible for them to leave part of their productive land in hedgerows, but they planted all around their pepper field cassava. And cassava is it's a root crop, so it doesn't need pollinators itself, but it has a flower that's very attractive to pollinators. Pepper is not actually that attractive, so by putting a ring of cassava around their peppers, they would pull in the pollinators, and then the pollinators would go from the cassava to the pepper and pollinate their pepper. So this idea of thinking out what the pollinators need and making a habitat that is more conducive to them is the most important thing. Leaving some nesting sites, some trees, if you have ground nesting bees, which is a lot of the squash and gourd and watermelon and so forth, the bees will often nest in the ground very close to the crop. So farmers need to look and see where on the ground there are these little holes. Just observe them and they'll see where they are and not to go through there with their hoe or to disturb it, drive over it or walk over it. Just during the bloom season is the most important time. So one side is making the habitat more conducive to bees, and the other side is really reducing agricultural chemicals and finding another way of controlling pests. And I think over time, this is also the trend that FAO has been going toward, is recognizing that these are all good recommendations, and farmers often will really try to apply them, but farmers are not going to manage pollination alone. They obviously are managing their whole farm. So what's most important for farmers is probably to have a way of managing this that is beneficial for pollination, but also beneficial for natural pest control and soil fertility and so forth. And so we've been trying to work a bit more on holistic farming systems that have benefits for all of these.
So what needs to happen at the policy level to harness pollination for better food security and nutrition around the world?
That's a very timely question, I think, as there has been this body, this new body that's been set up, the Intergovernmental Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services, that undertook an assessment of pollination as their very first assessment, and they have just come out. That's a body that is made up of member governments. So the member governments all sat together and sort of negotiated this text on sort of what needs to happen, a governmental standpoint. So that's a question that's out there and is being considered and addressed by a number of governments. You know, I won't go over all the details, but I think recognizing on a policy level the importance of pollination, having governments make this recognition of something that has just simply occurred naturally for a long time, but because of the way we've been developing agriculture and managing ecosystems, we're putting it under a threat and identifying what measures should be undertaken. Just in summary, I would say that the report comes out embracing a different kind of agriculture, more government support for a more diverse agriculture, and an agriculture that depends less on toxic chemicals. So it brings together all of those issues. Certainly, there's still a lot of needs for research that are identified within the report. But I think that basic structure of governments recognizing the importance and supporting farmers to practice a kind of agriculture that's more conducive to pollinators is a strong policy recommendation.